views and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. We're on Problem Corner. Your regular host, David Pruse, is traveling up north today, so he's asking me to sit in. I'm Jennifer Juhas. I'm your guest host today, and you can dial in at 907-458-TALK. That's 458-8255. We're going to talk about last night's election. Last night was the primary election here in Alaska, and we want to hear what surprised you. What did you think might happen and didn't? What did you not see coming? We're going to go through the federal races here at the top of the hour, and then we will move into the governor's race and hit the second half of the hour with the Senate and House composition for the Alaska legislature. But I don't think it was too much of a surprise that Nick Begich came out on top. We only have about 80% of the vote in, so just a reminder to everybody. I've got a signal from some of the staff here. Do I have not have one of my buttons working properly? Okay, do we have audio now? Excellent. Welcome to Problem Corner. I am your guest host who couldn't figure out the buttons this morning. David Pruse is traveling up north, and he's asked me to sit in. I'm Jennifer Juhas. I'll be with you this morning. Going over last night's election. Here in Alaska, we had our primary election, a jungle primary, with so many candidates running, especially for the U.S. House, U.S. Senate, and governor's race, 17 gubernatorial candidates. You can call in at 907-458-TALK, 458-8255, and let's talk about what surprised you in last night's election. Remember, we only have about 80% of the vote in. 79.5% of the vote has been tallied. We're still waiting for absentees, waiting for challenged ballots, and some of our rural precincts haven't weighed in yet, so that does come into play as we're trying to decide what the final verdict might be. Some of these are very easy to determine. Some of these local elections, Anchorage, some of the ones on the highway are fully reported, so we know what's happening there and what our prediction is for the general. This was a very low turnout election again, and I know we say that. We'd like everyone to go vote, but really, statistically speaking, when we're doing defensible polling, 10% of your group, as long as you have a good representation of different leanings, age, geography, 10% will tell you what's going on. A lot of these polls that you see that come pretty close to predicting things really only have a sample of under 1,000 people, definitely. A lot of them about 380 people, and they're still coming very close to predicting what will happen in a general election. So let's look at last night's primary. Again, if you want to call in, it's 907-458-TALK, 458-8255. So Nick Begich is sitting there at just about 46, a little bit more than 46%. He's got almost 60,000 votes. And right behind him is Bill Hill. But that difference between Begich is the Republican and Bill Hill is nonpartisan. He's backed by several Democrats who want to unelect Nick Begich. But he's still got, 15% ahead of him. what happens when we narrow that field down, because there are several candidates running. Matt Schultz is coming in third, and Eric Hafner, is both Democrats, are coming in third and fourth. So depending on what happens with that fourth and fifth place, depending on the rural and the absentees, you could see that number four change out. The only thing that they've called so far is that they expect both Nick Begich and Bill Hill to be in the final four. Probably Matt Schultz, he's there with 10,000 votes. And then Eric Hafner's got 4,900 and John Williams has 3,300. Could go either way with 20% of the vote still out there. What do you think? We're at 458-TALK. That's 458-8255. Moving down to the Senate race. That was a little bit surprising for me. I know we were hearing a lot about the two Dan Sullivans and how much the one, the new Dan Sullivan, not the incumbent, might take from him, either due to confusion or people trying to make sure that he gets into the final four. But we've got Mary Peltola, who used to be the representative, lost the election to Nick Begich and is now challenging our Senator Dan Sullivan. She's at the top there with 48%. She's got 63,000 votes. And Dan Sullivan, the incumbent, is right behind her at 42%. But Dan J. Sullivan, the one who's from Sitka, who is going through the court case right now, he's at 2.4%. So if you added that to Dan Sullivan's, the incumbent's, about 43%, you know, he'd be a lot closer. Let's take a call and see who's there. Good morning. You're on Problem Corner. Good morning. You're in Problem Corner. Hey there, Al. I can barely hear you. I'm going to try and turn your mic up here on the phone. Boy, it's just not coming through here. I'm trying to turn the knob up. If you keep talking, I will. Can we hear you now? I can barely hear you. You sound like you are way off in the distance there. And I've got all the knobs tuned the way that they had them here. I'm going to try and pick up the handset and see if you can talk right into the mic. Are you there, Al? Okay, I can barely hear you back there. So trying to take a call here from Al Barrett. Not able to get him on the air. I know he's got things to say. I usually meet with him on Wednesdays for lunch, and I'm interested to hear what was surprising for Al, if I can get these buttons to work so we can actually hear him. I did find it surprising, though, that the Dan J. Sullivan got almost 2.5% there, and then with so many people running, it'll be interesting to see where those votes get spread later. Going back up to the House race, I was pretty surprised that, you know, we've got some of these national folks, this Eric Hafner guy running, but Clay Strickland, just a guy with hardly any money from Valdez down there. He's been on one of the mining shows. He's worked as a laborer. He's coming in at sixth right now. And I don't see him making into the final four. You never know. I think that you know, a lot of our westward and northern votes are not going to know who he is and vote for him. I don't see him getting there. But I was real surprised that with these jungle primaries that, you know, throwing your name in there, just about anybody could end up on the final four. So trying to see if Al's going to be able to call back in. I know we're going to have to go to a break here soon. So let's just keep talking about the Senate race. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the other Dan Sullivan, the Dan J, if he does end up making it on the ballot, seeing what happens with the thank you. Here comes Glenner. He's going to press the magic button so we can hear Al if he calls back in on the phone.
There you go.
Okay.
That's the one.
Okay, we've got it. Thank you. And I'm going to update this photo that says Problem Corner.
No problem.
And it looks like that's probably Al calling back in. Thank you, Glenner. Is this Al? Are you there, Al? Okay, Glenner pressed the buttons. I pressed the pickup. I don't seem to have you on the air here. We've got the red button lit up on the phone. It looks like we're supposed to be able to talk to you. Why don't you just call me on my phone, Al? He says, dead air, yes. I think Al's going to end up calling me on my phone, and we're just going to put him up to the microphone because I want to find out what actually surprised him. Al and I are often surprised by very different things. I'm going to give Al a call here. See if he answers. Come on, pick up, Al. Trying to get you in so you can talk.
Your call has been forwarded to voicemail.
Okay, so Al's not going to pick up. I can't, even with Glenner pressing the right buttons here, I can't seem to get you on the air, but I do want to hear from you. So some of these surprising things going on in the election, it is really just amazing how somebody can come out of nowhere and end up on the ballot for the final four when we really used to just, when we had primaries, they were run by the parties, and it was to get one person out of a party. Now with these jungle primaries, everybody runs together, and some people don't hate it so much because they have more choice. I know there's a lot of people who you may be registered with one party, and when the primaries were closed, you weren't able to pull a ballot that, if you were a Republican and you wanted to vote for the Republicans at the top of the ticket, when we say the top, we mean the U.S. Senate races, the U.S. House races, and the governor's race, which usually had more candidates, and maybe you're in a district that really leans one way or another, and if you chose the open ballot, you wouldn't get to have the Republicans on there. And if you chose the Republican ballot and there were two Democrats running to represent you in your House district, you didn't have a say in who that was because you had the opposite ballot. And so there was some confusion there. I know there's going to be a ballot measure again on the general to do away with the system that we have now. Some people are just finally learning that and learning how to utilize it. I'd love to know what your thoughts are if we could get the phones working here. I know that Glenner came in and pressed the buttons, but we could not get Al when he called back in. But would like to hear what your thoughts are. I know a lot of people just want to do away with ranked choice. What about the open primaries? Some people want the ranked choice to go away because they want to be able to just pick one in the end, and they don't want the scoring. They don't want to have to wait a week to find out what the answer is to see who won, but they do want the primaries to be open, and I've heard from several people who feel that if parties want their own primary to choose their own person to put forth, that they should have to pay for it themselves. Smaller parties like the old OWL Party, some of the independent parties, they have fewer members, if you will, for their parties, and so their cost would be much smaller. You know, sending out 380 letters to a small group is going to be less cost prohibitive than the two major parties who would, you know, instead of the state paying for it, if they had to pay for that themselves. But then how do people feel about that? Do they want the state to pay for closed primaries, or do they want the parties to do that themselves? And then how do you count that? So we'll see what happens with the ranked choice ballot initiative later. But, you know, right now, another surprising factor, a local person from Fairbanks, climate activist, David Leslie is in fourth place here. You know, sure, with 1.1% of the vote, probably would not win the U.S. Senate race. But anything could happen with 20% of the vote still out there. Gerald Heikes is right behind him. But we could end up with somebody local with very little money being one of the final four. And we're trying to answer the phone here. Do we have our caller? I'm trying to turn the volume up as high as I can here. I can barely hear you off in the distance. Do not know what was going on with the phones. One time I was in here and I thought it was my fault, and they did say no, that they were working on the system. And so I felt a little bit better after that. But I want to hear what other people think. I don't want to just be on here babbling for the next hour. But it is time for a break, so we are going to go ahead and do that now and see if we can change anything.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fish on! The Valdez Fishing Report is brought to you by Frontier Outfitters. Drop in and explore their extensive fishing department. Rods to reels, lures to lines. You'll see fresh and saltwater, as well as fly fishing tackle for every game fish in Alaska. Stock up on supplies for your Alaska-sized summer of fun. Coolers to camping gear. Frontier Outfitters is your first stop to making your next outdoor adventure a success. Your store for the outdoors. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
Chase Edstrom of North Pole was fishing with his wife and three kids out at Knoll's Head when he caught a mammoth 18.80-pound silver salmon. "It was about the biggest silver I had ever seen," Edstrom said. "We were just mooching, just sitting there." Mooching's a lot easier when you've got a boat full of kids because they're running around all crazy. I don't have to worry about trolling, trying to avoid other boats. Edstrom's fish is the largest silver caught in the Valdez Derby since 2010. And with such a solid lead, Edstrom's fish looks like a shoe-in to win the $10,000 first place prize. If Edstrom's fish wins the $10,000 prize, he said he would pay the taxes on it and donate the rest to The Door in Fairbanks, an emergency shelter for homeless and at-risk youth. Edstrom's been fishing Valdez for 12 years and says he always buys season tickets for both the silver salmon and halibut derbies. When asked for advice on catching a big silver, Edstrom said, "It was just dumb luck." Silver salmon fishing in Valdez has been hot, and Edstrom is not the only angler catching big fish. Warren Blood of Valdez is currently in second place with a 16.80-pound fish he caught August 15th, and Cheryl Wagner of Copper Center is currently in third with a 16.02-pound fish she caught August 7th.
If you're looking to catch a big halibut, silver salmon, or rockfish in Valdez, get geared up at the Prospector in Valdez. Need boots or rain gear? Prospector's got it. Our Valdez store has rods, reels, tackle, bait, and even coolers to bring your catch home too. Talk to our local experts and get the right gear for Prince William Sound. The Prospector's open late all summer.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun today, with daytime highs approaching 68. Winds out of the southwest around 5 miles an hour. Cloudy tonight. Lows dip down to about 49. Slight chance for isolated rain showers tomorrow, 68. Cloudy. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Okay, we're rolling now because Glenner came in here at the break and pressed two more different buttons, and now I can hear the callers in my audio. Apparently, we could hear you on the air. So I got a couple text messages from Al. Go ahead and I got a thumbs up text here from him now. Call back in, Al. I want to find out what surprised you. I know what surprised me, but I thought these top of the ticket races, a couple surprises at the federal level were couple of locals who may make it on the final four, probably won't win. I mean, let's face it, you know, when you get 2% of the vote and 1% of the vote, you're really just not a contender. But how exciting for somebody local to end up there. Kind of want to move on to the governor's race here. There were several surprises for me in the governor's race. Now, people were trying to get us all to pick our final four early on, and I honestly thought, you know, they were jostling in position as the day went on, or as the months went on here. Initially, when I saw the filing, I thought JKT, Jonathan Kreese Tompkins, would come out on top of Tom Begich. But then as the campaign went on, I doubted myself. And people were saying, no, Tom's going to be first. And I did not expect both of them to be number one and number two. As things went on, I thought one of them would be number one, and one of them might make four, but could come in at five. And boy, was I wrong. But then when you've got such a spread of Republicans, the Republicans really, you know, I had to add it up and say, if things were different, you know, were they matched? Was there about 40% and 40%, 50-50? And for the voters, it really was. So we're going to go ahead and answer the phone again here now. Good morning. You're on Problem Corner.
Good morning, Jen. This is Al.
And I can hear you.
Ah, excellent. So what made me pick my jaw off the kitchen table this morning when I was reading the paper was ballot measure number one. And
why was your jaw on the kitchen table?
Why individuals wanted to limit themselves to how much money they could contribute to a campaign, yet let PACs and super PACs basically be unlimited.
Because they saw lots of messaging on dark money, and they didn't have time to think about it, and they thought, yeah, I don't want dark money.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen all the same ads, too, but it didn't resonate in my mind like that.
I know, but not everybody has, you know, little paper tabs out of every copy of their statute book. I mean, there's uninformed voters. There's the uninformed who don't vote. There are informed who don't vote. And then there are a mass of uninformed voters who, you know, you and I scrutinize those things. I make fun of somebody's use of fonts or spelling errors or when they send me things that says date and a time but no location for their meet and greet. Other people just look at it, they see it, they throw it in the trash, and all that sticks with them is the advertising. And we call that a low-informed voter. Now, you are a hyper-informed voter. I am myself, too. It's not a criticism. There's those of us who are an informed voter, and then we go find some of our own information wherever we can find it, talk to a million people about what we think. What else surprised you besides the ballot measure?
That Decoy Dan, without very, if any, advertising, got over 2% of the vote.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised that he was as high as he was, and it's interesting to see that he probably will make it on to the final four, and then does the person who came in fifth hang on and wait in case he's disqualified to see if they can make it on?
Yes, that's what'll happen. So that was my takeaway from it. Otherwise, I wasn't super surprised about too much of the other stuff.
I was a little surprised that Mary's numbers were as high with the speculation that some people were voting for Decoy Dan in who would have been her supporters. So I would have expected her number to be a little bit lower if Decoy Dan was taking from her. If it was confusion, you know, there's the difference between is it a conspiracy or is it confusion? And if it was confusion, that would show, you know, you get 2.4 for him and 42.9 for Dan S. Sullivan, the incumbent senator. You know, if you applied that to the incumbent, he's still a little bit shy of Mary's. But I'm waiting, too, to see what happens with the other 20% because, you know, it's within that margin. But then some of us, when I say you're a hyper-informed voter, people like me and Reneva Moss, if you're listening, we will sit and analyze each of the precincts and try to determine what type of voter came out. And I've got a speculation that while left-leaning voters didn't used to turn out as heavily in a primary, that they were really turning out for this race, just based on some of the results. I'm going to go through the state Senate and state House races, and I had some real surprises in the Valley where I did not expect the Democrat to pick up to be in the second place. I expected them to be in third place, like we see in North Pole, because that's the demographic down there. And there's so many races that we say, you know, just like Zach Fields in the old Ethan Berkowitz district down there, I mean, it's 10 to 1. You can run a Republican, but it's registration and turnout is 10 to 1 down there. You're wasting your time. You can have fun. You can make them spend some money, but you're not going to take the seat. The Valley has been like that, too. But to see incumbents teetering or even with a 10-point lead, and then the number two is right behind them as a Dem, and two other Republicans are down there low, was really interesting. Looks like we are going to go to a break. We will be back with more Problem Corner.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
The U.S. pausing 50% tariffs on Canadian goods that were supposed to go into effect today. President Trump reports good talks with our neighbors to the north.
We had a very good conversation with the Prime Minister last night, and we've come to a deal with Canada. As you know, the 50% tariffs across the board were going on against Canada today.
Prime Minister Carney says the postponement will last until the end of the week. Police in Atlanta have arrested and charged Lakeisha Brown for allegedly kidnapping two children. The Atlanta police out with 911 audio in which the child's mother tells an operator Brown had been babysitting.
She told me they was in the accident, but she's not answering her phone, or she's not picking up her phone, she's not texting back. She told me that they had got transferred to a children's hospital. She said he was falling, but I called all the hospital, and they're not in nobody's system.
Police did find the children. Both of them were safe. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTVF reports a Fairbanks man who was wanted on millions of dollars in warrants was recently arrested following a lengthy surveillance investigation, according to Alaska State Troopers. Charles Yingst, 44, was confined to house arrest in February while he was awaiting trial for fraud and theft charges. On July 21st, authorities were notified that Yingst's ankle monitor was cut off and Yingst was nowhere to be found. He was charged with multiple misdemeanor counts of escaping and several felony charges of violating pretrial release conditions. Alaska State Troopers stated in a dispatch report that he was wanted on multiple warrants totaling more than $2 million. Just last Wednesday, troopers arrested Yingst at a residence in Big Lake. The AST dispatch report states a Fairbanks-based AST criminal suppression unit conducted a lengthy surveillance of the residence. The arrest involved both AST and the United States Marshal Service. Yingst is scheduled to appear for an arraignment at the Superior Court in Fairbanks today.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Mary Peltola was a do-nothing congresswoman. She missed 20% of her votes and failed to pass a single bill into law. When her lower 48 Liberal Party bosses demanded that she oppose her own bill on expanding Alaska oil production, Mary Peltola cut and ran on our energy workers. She sold Alaska out. Here's Congressman Pete Stauber from Minnesota with the real story on Mary Peltola.
I served with Mary Peltola. She didn't show up for work and didn't get one bill signed into law. Worse, Peltola sponsored a bill to increase Alaska oil production, but her Liberal Party bosses objected, so she voted against her own bill and told other Liberals to do the same. I've never seen a member of Congress sell out their state like this. I had to carry the bill across the finish line. Mary Peltola sided with D.C. Liberals instead of Alaska.
I'm Dan Sullivan, candidate for U.S. Senate, and I approve this message. Join us. Give today.
Go to putalaskafirst.org. Paid for by Put Alaska First.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
So we're back on Problem Corner. We're talking about last night's election results, acknowledging that we've only got 79.5% of the vote tallied. We still have to do absentees. Several of the rural areas still need to weigh in. We've gone through the top of the ticket with the U.S. House and U.S. Senate. We'll get to the governor's race after this segment. This segment, we want to go through the Alaska State Senate and Alaska State House. Now, some of these races are surprising, but let's also talk about the makeup of the Senate and the House. A lot of our discussions, some people are voting for the candidates that will represent them based on the issues. Some of them are voting for them based on whether they like them, whether they're civil, whether they feel good around them. Some people are also basing their vote on, even if they don't like the candidate that much, if they align more with their values and that person might put weight on which group will be in the majority. Now, in the Alaska Senate and House, we've had these bipartisan majorities the last couple of years. There are folks out there who don't like that. There are folks out there who want that. And so some voters are voting more for what they think a group will get done than how they feel about the individual. Let's remember that in the Senate, we have 20 seats, and only half of those are up for election every 2 years. In the House, we have 40 seats. All of them are up for election every 2 years. So in the Senate, every other senator will be running. Senate A is up, and we've got Bert Stedman running unopposed. So we know that we get him back. Right now, I've got a tally of not really any changing seats. We'll see what happens with Senate C. When I say changing, so in Senate A, Bert Stedman's been the chair of finance for a very long time. He's running unimposed. We know he's coming back. He has joined and probably would join a mixed majority again. On the Senate District C, Louise Stutes, former Speaker of the House, moderate Republican, who has led and has joined mixed majorities, is running for Senate now to replace Gary Stevens. He always joined these mixed majorities also. There's two other Republicans running against her, and in that area down in Southeast that she's from, you get more moderate-type Republicans. I'm not sure if Heath Smith would join a mixed majority or not. That seems to be part of why folks are running against her rather than just letting her have the seat. And in this primary, where we have a lower number of turnout, she's still got about an 8-point spread here, right? So she's got 47%. The Heath Smith, who's right behind her, is at 39%. Would that change in a general? Maybe, because the numbers could be very different down there based on that. It's not about partisanship. It could be about which majority you would join and whether or not she's well known in that half of the district. While being a House rep and easily elected in her House seat, each Senate seat is double the size. So there's two House reps per Senate seat. So now she's trying to level up and go to the Senate. So she may be having some trouble in the other half of that district, and his address is over in that half of the district. So we'll see what happens there. State Senate District E, that is the Valley, that is Anchorage. And so Kathy Geisel looks like she is handily coming back. She's a moderate Republican. Some have called her a rhino. Everybody in that race has an R behind their name. All four of them will go to the general election, but she's got 60%, unless three of them are going to get behind one and try to consolidate their efforts, I still don't really see it happening. The number two in that race is trailing with 20% and then 10% and then 8%. You can add that all up and you still don't get 60%, but it's, you know, a small sample compared to what might turn out in the general. There'll be things, you know, that draw people to a general who didn't vote in the primary. So we will see what happens with that. But it's looking pretty secure for Kathy Geisel to come back. And she also is a mixed majority joiner. In District G, Senator Gray Jackson, is up 67% to Nicholas Danger. He's a perennial candidate. He's got a great name for a politician, you know, Nick Danger. But you know, it's gonna go 70-30 like it always does in that district. And Elvie will be coming back, and she's a Democrat, fairly liberal. She does join a mixed majority, though. Right after her, again, seats are not going to be changing. Senator Lukey Gale Tobin, who replaced Tom Begich in that same district, downtown Westchester Lagoon, Anchorage. The registration and the turnout is 10 to 1, and nobody bothered to run against her, so she gets her seat back. She also is a Democrat who joins a mixed majority, so no turnover there. And then same thing with District K, where Bill Willikowski, Bill Will, as some people call him, has been highly publicized with the gas line and still running unopposed. So the incumbent will come back, and doesn't really matter. Nobody's running against him. And there's not time to mount any sort of a write-in campaign for these unopposed folks. So those are seats that will not turn over. Now, here's what I found surprising. In Senate M, where Kathy Tilton is, she was appointed to the Senate seat when one of the senators decided not to run again. One ran for light gov, one ran for governor, and so we had two people appointed to the Senate. Right behind her is Patty Chesbro with a D. There's two more R's in that race. She's got a healthy lead here in a primary, 42%, with Patty Chesbro trailing at 30% behind her, but that's not usually the spread that we see. We usually see less votes for the Democrat, and so I'm wondering what the turnout was and want to analyze that later. We've got another caller. They hung up. Okay. It was blinking there. Okay, here we go. Here we got another caller. Good morning. You're on Problem Corner.
Good morning.
Hello there.
Hi, can you hear me this time?
I can hear you.
Hey, it's Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Rick.
I'm going to raise a lot of feathers on this one.
Okay, you're going to raise feathers?
You know, I'm going to anger people.
Okay.
You know, this, our deficit has never been higher. I'm a Republican, or more of an independent, but I lean Republican. The deficit's never been higher. The anger in this country has never been higher. The rudeness has never been higher.
Yeah, incivility.
And the bad thing is, a lot of our good Republican candidates are not talking to the people, you know, going on radios and allowing people to call in and talk to them and stuff. They do these closed radio things. And because of that, people are going to look elsewhere. This is like all over again, Richard Nixon and stuff. This is really bad for our Republican Party.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that when I see some of the behavior from people who I know will vote the way that their constituents might want, and then they become insular. You see a lot of folks go rhino hunting when, you know, we're talking about the majority and the minority here and how many seats you have. I was an aide back when we had a supermajority of Republicans down at our state capitol. And, you know, the insulation and the rhino hunting, you know, they're all happy to do it until someone rhino hunts them and then they say, me? What? For one vote on one amendment? Where did this come from? You think they learned their lesson. And then they go do it again. Some of these races, even locally, seem to be more about ego than they do about serving. And that insulation, you're absolutely right.
Well, you know, I go to the States a lot for work and stuff and do things in the States. And I used to just chalk it up, all these, that's just this district, this area of the state, where they're attacking the president or they're attacking this. Well, I was down on the Kenai fishing, talking to this guy, and he's a staunch Republican. This guy was all, you know, and he said to me, you know what? I think that Trump is going to ruin it for the good people, and he's going to get a lot of Republicans thrown out, and I have to agree with him. You know, the other thing is our Constitution has been around for 250 years. And it's the greatest Constitution in the world. You can't bend that Constitution. It's not made out of rubber. It's made out of crystal glass. You bend it, it shatters.
I thought it was made out of paper.
It is, of course, made out of paper.
Just giving you some...
I know. But you can't do this. And the Constitution is something that we ought to teach more in school and talk about more and more. People need to know more about it and the people that wrote it. And instead, you know, right now we have a president criticizing the Navy. The president's never done a day in the military in his life. He was a draft-dodging person with flat feet, so-called flat feet. And he's saying bad things about our Navy and our military. We have the greatest military on the planet. So, anyway.
What's your prediction for our local elections? And do I detect a little bit, is that a New Hampshire accent? Where's that accent from?
Maine.
Maine, okay. That part of the country, at least.
You know, I've been listening to a lot of political stuff, you know, speaking. There's one lady that really impressed me. I think her name's Pepper or something.
So she's running in North Pole as a Democrat,
yeah.
And
right.
You know, I'm gonna scroll down here and let you know the numbers on that. So what you've got out in that district is you've got incumbent Mike Prox. So he's been serving, ran a couple times unopposed, and he's being challenged by his former staffer. And the major criticism of Mike seems to be that he's not, you know, flashy enough and loud enough. He's kind of leaning into the fact that he's sure and steady. He's a solid MAGA vote. But some of the Republicans are angry with him because he will go have a conversation with some of the Democrats. And, you know, North Pole, it'll be interesting to see. North Pole has had a history of long-term candidates like Mike, like when Mike Miller was there. And so, you know, they tend to like people that are dependable. We'll see if, you know, his former staffer, who is a little louder, you know, they're saying Mike's too quiet. That's why she's running. You know, she's louder, a little more flashy. And then Pepper is at a disadvantage. The registration out there, just like the opposite of the Westchester Lagoon in Anchorage, the registration and turnout in North Pole, I just don't see them electing a Democrat or a nonpartisan or an independent. They tend to go for the R's.
I agree with you 100%. However, I listened to some of the stuff she said, and I was like, wow, that's actually made some sense, you know?
And so what part of it made sense? What part of what she was talking about made sense? Was it the civility portion?
It was the, well, yeah. I'm so sick of the anger and stuff.
Right.
She was talking about, golly, I can't remember everything. It was on... I think it was last Saturday on the Christian channel there in North Pole.
Oh, yeah, right. The coffee deal. You go out there and you can have coffee, and they'll let you talk on the air.
Yeah, and I love listening to that. They do
it's a good one.
Stuff. I listen to Tammy Wilson a lot out there.
Yeah.
And she's done some really good things, and I like listening to her.
You sound like a voter who contemplates actually what people are saying. When I was talking to Al, we have, you know, uninformed voters and informed voters, and it sounds like you're resonating with both Pepper and with Tammy Wilson, and you know, Tammy's supporting one of the Republicans in that race, and so the numbers on that one for you, though, Rich, are that so Mike Prox is in the lead with 1,243 votes. Right behind him is his former staffer with 1,125. So each of them, you know, so the Republican vote there is already going to be around 3,000, you know, 2,500. And then Pepper's down there with 897 votes. And I think that holds in the general. We'll see if the Republicans want to duke it out. What we know about both of the Republicans in that race is that each of them would only join a Republican caucus, so they would not caucus with a mixed majority just to get, you know, seats and gavels and have a little more power down there. So really that race is going to come down more to style and personality. They're both solid MAGA votes that won't caucus with the Dems, but, you know, one is running as sure and steady, predictable, dependable. The other one is running as louder, going to get some action, flashy, and we'll see what North Pole voters really want out there.
You know, and that is a bummer for me across the board that they won't interact with another, you know, independent or Democrat.
That's actually the criticism on Mike Prox, is that he will interact. So, you know, some people want him to, you know, I guess, you know, shut the door on the devil, don't talk to them. Neither one of them will caucus and join an after-school club to say who gets all the gavels, right? But Mike will go have more social interaction.
The problem with that is that it's just like, you know, I believe if you're going to hire a guy, you want to hire the best guy for the job. And if he doesn't agree with you, but he's going to make you money, you know, hey, that's what you want. You don't want somebody that's just going to agree with you, because, you know, you're going to lose money with those people.
Right.
You want to look and be educated and get the best, biggest bang for the buck that you can out of anything. You know, we have people saying, oh, I'm going to get you your PFD 100%. That's never going to happen, people. If you're voting for them to get your PFD 100%, guess what? I'm sorry. Those days have come and gone.
So
already opened
we've got some governor's candidates that are promising that. What did you think of the spread on the governor's race?
I think, you know, once again, I'm going to piss people off. I actually like the governor that we had, the one that run his course and is done now.
Right, Mike Dunleavy.
Mike Dunleavy. I really liked him. There were things that pissed me off over, you know, I was irritated with a few things, but that's the thing about this whole thing, is if you're looking for somebody that's only going to do what you want, there's thousands of other people in this country, in this state, that need their opinion too, listen to. So don't just go for one. Look for the biggest bang we can. You know, and these people that are promising you, oh, I'm going to balance the budget, I'm going to just, you know, they're not part of the House. That's the governor's office. There's a big difference.
You know, you hit on a really important point, and that is the thoroughness of debate. When I first came down to Juneau as a legislative staffer, I was with a boss who had broken off of the majority to be in the little micro-minority of it was the Conservative Republican Caucus, Coghill, Coring, Ogun, and Sanders, and I worked for Jerry Sanders, and I was just learning these things, right? And I said, you know, well, wouldn't it be great if everybody was a conservative? And he said, no, it actually would not. It would not be good for the state of Alaska. He said, you need me, and you need Sharon Cisna. And I looked puzzled because Sharon was a lovely human being, big liberal Democrat, who literally gave a floor speech one time about big fluffy clouds. No one understood what it was about, but it was like, okay, thank you, Sharon. You know, actually, the speaker, Porter, said, thank you, Representative Cisna. Are there any other announcements? But Jerry said, because there are people in our state who do align with her, and someone has to speak for them. I have to speak for the people who vote our way and think our way, but without her, we don't have adequate debate to thoroughly make the decisions that we make, which he was open to say, you know, I hope that they make them the way that I want them in the end, but we have to have the robust debate that brings up her side of the issue before we make those decisions. He was very wise.
Absolutely. All right, I'm going to let you go.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Hope somebody calls in and opens my eyes to what they think, too.
Well, I appreciate also that while you think what you think, that part of listening to Problem Corner is getting our eyes open, hearing something new, and you just have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
So we've only got a few minutes left. The call-in line is 458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And we've been talking about the makeup of the House and the Senate and who would join which majorities. I really don't see much changing. George Rauscher, who has been working only within a Republican caucus, he's got a healthy lead, but we'll see what happens. The other R in the race in District O down there is right behind him, but the D is very, very far away. You know, well, when you combine the Republican votes, if they're going to do any ranking, I don't see the D getting in down there. I mean, the numbers are, you know, they're all in the 2000s. George is bumping up on 3,000, but you know, when you combine the Republican and Democrat votes turnout, and traditionally in that race, I don't see that happening. But with Senate District M, with Kathy Tilton, you know, we've got Patty Chesbrough right behind her, 42%, 30%. But if you added up all of the Republican votes, she would be in the 60s if she didn't have two Republicans trying to challenge her. District S, that is the one out west where Lyman Hoffman, who had been there forever, always, you know, in some form of leadership, he finally decided to retire, and we wish him the best. Bryce Edgman from that district is trying to level up to Senate. Former House member, again, has to get to know the other half of the district that he wasn't from. I'm going to take another call here, and you're on Problem Corner. Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fantastic. Who am I talking to?
Tim Schieber.
Hi, Tim Schieber. What do you got for us?
Well, I was just listening to something you were saying, and there's an old saying down in the South that takes 50% Democrats and 50% Republicans to keep them half honest.
To keep them half honest. I could tell you were from the South. Now, where are you from the South?
Right there at the Georgia-Florida line, I'm about 2 hours from Tallahassee and 2 hours from Jacksonville.
Okay. Do you hunt and fish down there?
A little bit, but I have time.
Black bears, alligators?
Hog hunting.
Hog hunting. I'm going to get to go do that this October. I've been trying to go do that for about 15 years. I'm finally going to go do it.
Well, y'all got some pretty terrain up here. This is the first time I've been up. I drove up pulling a camper trailer. I just wanted to check this off of my bucket list.
Oh, so you're just here visiting.
That's correct.
Okay, are you staying for hunting season?
No, I'm leaving back in about 10 days.
Okay, so do you usually just tune into the local talk radio?
Yeah, I just accidentally found you because the other day when I was driving up from the Canadian border, y'all were the only station I could find on AM or FM.
That's right. So if you've been listening to what's been going on, what do you think of, you know, the little Alaska system here where we've got this ranked choice voting and these jungle primaries and 17 people running for governor? And I'm curious what an out-of-stater's thoughts are on that.
It just seems to me like there's too many that's jumping in the races and all nowadays compared to what I'm used to years ago.
I mean, I would have figured that maybe we'd have 7 or 8. I did not expect, you know, the first time we did this when, you know, Congressman Young passed away, 48 candidates, 17 for governor, that all have a match with a light. You know, I don't think all of us foresaw what was going to happen when this got enacted, and you know, there's been some efforts to modify it. What are your thoughts on, as we were talking about, closed primaries versus open primaries? I mean, it's two different questions. One, having everybody on the same ballot where everybody gets to vote, or the parties choosing their own, and should the state elections pay for that, or should parties have to pay for their own primaries? And that's aside from this ranked choice stuff. What are your thoughts coming up here from your area? Okay, he is gone. And thank you so much for calling in. But if anybody else has thoughts, we've got just a couple more minutes. 458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And the House has a lot of the similar things. It's going to be difficult to tell what's going to happen. If a few seats get flipped, which they may, one big surprise was looking at the Birch Hill area and seeing that Joy Beth Cottle is up over Harmony Tomaszewski. That's been a pretty solid Republican area. She ran last time against Frank and didn't do as well as she did in this primary against Harmony. While Frank's got pretty easy sailing out there, picking up the other half of the district that includes North Pole, where Rob Meyer went ahead and retired. And thank you for your service, Rob. And we'll see what happens there. We do have a few House members who are also running unopposed. Those are also Democrats who usually join a mixed majority. Now, District 23 in Eagle River, where we've got Jamie Allard, staunch Republican. She's got a couple of challengers. Again, I was surprised that the number two in that race is a Democrat. For Eagle River, I was not expecting that. Even when we've got, you know, 1, 2, 3 Republicans running, we've got 2 Democrats running, I would have thought number one and number two would be Republican, because that's usually how that district goes. And if a Democrat runs, they usually come in third. But we'll see what the turnout was. That is with 77% of the vote in. I don't know why it takes that long to get votes in from Eagle River, but perhaps that is the base. There's a lot of absentees out. I guess we will see. Looking like Ken McCarty comes back in District 24. Now, that's where Dan Sadler retired. Thank you also, Dan. Sharon Jackson ran again for that. She fared better previously, but she's only got 18% of the vote there. All three of those are Republicans. We're not sure whether they would caucus only with Republicans or with Democrats as well. And looking like Jubilee Underwood is on top of David Eastman down there with a healthy 10% spread, but that's about